I didn't leave the big company because I hated it. It just came down to what I wanted to be winning at. In a big company, I was winning through execution. I wanted to be winning at building. It was just a different season in my life. I have a philosophy that I call you write the rules, and I decided I was going to change the rules. And so big companies gave me credibility and capability, which has been so valuable to me. Startups give me aliveness now. And that's not better or worse, it's just a choice.
When it comes to leadership, context makes a big difference. Leaders that do well in large established companies are masters of securing resources, building consensus, and navigating the politics. But if you take those successful executives and put them into a leadership role in a startup, many of them struggle because leadership in a startup requires a different set of skills. Michelle Veit has made that difficult transition. She's a food tech executive, board director and advisor, who currently serves as the chief commercial officer of Elo Life Systems. Prior to that, Michelle was the chief commercial officer at Motif Foodworks, where as one of its first employees, she led the effort to introduce and commercialize the company's game-changing ingredients, and where I had the pleasure of working with her. But before Motif, Michelle held executive roles at giant companies like Nestle and DuPont, where she was in charge of a $3.5 billion nutrition and health portfolio. In our conversation, we explore how leadership in a large established company is different from leadership in a startup, how her big company experience has helped her, what she had to unlearn, and what's really key to succeed with that transition. Whether you're an exec toying with taking the leap into the startup world, or a founder looking to bring in some big company experience to help you scale, this episode offers lots of practical insights. I hope you enjoy it, and if you do, please don't forget to like and share. Hey, Michelle, welcome to the show.
Hey, Thomas, great to be here. Thanks a bunch.
Our topic is leading in a startup, and you've held senior leadership roles in some very large companies before pivoting into the startup world. Maybe just to get us started, what made you take that plunge?
I love that question because I have led in some really big organizations. And I've loved being in big company leadership. At DuPont, I was at DuPont Nutrition and Health. That was one of my last really big companies that I led. I ran a $3.5 billion nutrition and health portfolio across probiotics, culture sweeteners, fibers, food protection, and proteins. Real scale, real complexity, big stuff. But after winning there, Thomas, through what I call execution, I really wanted to win through what I call building. And startups, you're much closer to the customer and what I call closer to the truth. In a big company, you get to hide behind thousands and thousands of people. And in a startup, you can't hide behind that org chart. And that shift toward ownership, speed, and impact, it's what I call like living in the truth, and also a philosophy I live by. It's my brand of you write the rules. And that's why I wanted to be in a startup so I could write my own rules. And so I loved being in large companies and large organizations. And so I didn't leave because I didn't like being there. But I needed to just be closer to the market and closer to customers, closer to the market, closer to what was really happening in things. So I didn't leave scale. I just left distance, as I would call it.
So you already talked a little bit about what's different about leading in a startup.
Yeah.
One part is you're closer to the customer. What are some other things that are really different?
So first, I would say it's like a lot of energy. That's where you're doing new things, new categories, new partnerships, new growth plays. It's just really exciting in there. And startups are basically, that energy is just every day new. Another thing is in a large company, because Thomas, you've been in big companies before as well. Leadership in a large company is navigating complexity. It's getting your ducks in a row all the time, aligning stakeholders all the time. You've done that as well, right? We can laugh about things like that, but you have to be really good at those kind of things and working in a lot of discipline. In a startup, leadership is really about creating clarity in chaos, creating clarity and ambiguity every single day. I like to say that your calendar becomes the culture because your calendar is changing constantly. You're building an operating system while you're flying that plane. And these are cliches, but you're building everything while you're flying. And think about that operating system, because you and I have talked and you and I have worked in this while we're trying to build processes and an operating system. So you've got to figure out decision rights, cadence, what good looks like while you're building everything. Because when you come into a startup, there's nothing. There's no culture. There's no history. There's no norms. There's nothing. And so you have to build all of that while at the same time you're doing product development, you're inventing the technology, you're doing all of the work. Sometimes you're building all of that operating system while you're shipping product. So you have to do all of that work. And leadership is completely different. And so people can walk in and there's so much chaos and ambiguity. And leadership is so different because you're trying to manage that ambiguity, living in it, feeling it every day, yet trying to be bringing that clarity and that focus. I wanted to share a concrete example about this and contrasting the differences. At DuPont, and this is typical of any great big company, like your five-year plan, we used to call it at DuPont, the strat plan. It's a real artifact. It lives there year after year, and it becomes quite rote because you could just easily do it year after year, and it hardly changed. At Elo, where I am now, the plan is a living hypothesis. It gets tightened by customer conversations that we're having every week. It gets upgraded every month, because we're having board conversations every month. Every quarter, we're having investor meetings, and the investors can really change things because, and so sometimes it flips because their demands change because they have outcomes they need for their returns, and their returns on their money are immediate. So in a startup, your behavior is the org design because speed is imperative. So all that change happens all the time. So different than the leadership that you're navigating in a great big company.
One could assume that it might be a disadvantage to have had that big company corporate experience if the world in the startup is so different. But what part of the experience of working in really large, complex organizations was useful and maybe gave you an advantage that maybe people who just grew up in the startup world might not have?
Yeah, that's another really good question. And it's funny because when I think about hiring people, Thomas, and often I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want big company experience, because that's a huge transition coming from a big company into a startup, because it's night and day. It's a completely other side of the fence. But I wouldn't change the 20 plus years that I was in a big company, because it gave me incredible value and discipline that I bring to a startup, or anybody can bring to a startup. And I want to give you a few examples of what is so important that blue chip can bring that's invaluable in a startup. But a headline first I want to share is that a big company taught me how to make promises that I can keep in a startup. And the foundation of that comes from three things I want to share. First, I have P&L discipline that's critical in a startup. And I find this now after being 8 years in the startup world, that there's so many founders that just simply do not have the fundamentals of P&L discipline, how to grow while managing margins, pricing, and all the trade-offs that come with financial strategy that you learn in a great big company and that you get by coming up in a big company and learning financial strategy and discipline and growing into a strong general manager. The second thing is scaling muscles. It's so important in a startup that you know how to scale and get to repeatability. An example I'll give here is at Soleil, I manage global operations across 9 manufacturing sites, 10 countries, and I increased the earnings by 39% over that time I was there. And it wasn't just managing those, but I had to increase productivity, optimize the operations. I was greenfielding one site, shutting down a few others. It was all about optimizing and scaling that I just learned how to build those muscles. And that's important, incredibly important in a startup. And the third thing that's really important in a startup is executive level communications. Be able to be the face of the business teaches you, and every leader understands this, how to simplify complexity. When you're in a startup, most of the time you're doing very technical work. And so how you communicate that technology in a very simple way to investors, to customers, to anybody externally is incredibly important. And also to build trust with regulators, boards, customers, the scientific community, anybody that you're talking to. And those skills become rocket fuel within a startup. So you can hit product market fit and repeatability. That is so critical in a startup. So the startup needs speed, but scale requires discipline and that ability to communicate, get to scale, and financial discipline and strategy are so critical. And all of that I learned from my big company experience.
That's interesting because every startup wants to become a large organization, right? So having had the experience of what large looks like, right, is probably incredibly helpful as you build towards that. Because otherwise you can stay small forever.
And I'm so proud of all of that work. That was hard work to learn all of that. You want to bring all of that forward and use all of those skills. It's so important to have all of that. The other thing I want to say is because you don't want to live in just all of the fantasy of, oh my gosh, I have this like great technology and it's so wonderful. And it's like technology, there's something really cool here, and not be able to turn that into a valuable business that you can make money at.
But I would imagine there's also some things that you need to unlearn, right? So some of the tools that you learned are probably not helpful in the startup world. What are some of those?
There's actually a huge amount that I had to unlearn and that anybody coming in has to unlearn, because if you carry everything that you have from a big company and think that everything that you had that worked for you in a big company and walk right into a startup with all of that big company stuff and big company baggage, you're going to smack right into a wall, because all of the things, it's just like going into any new job that you have. What worked for you before is not going to replicate perfectly into the next job you have. And in big company culture, you cannot replicate that into a startup. So I would say the first thing, there's a few things here that I want to share. The first thing is about consensus. And it goes back to that alignment piece that all of us, if you're successful in a big company, you get so good at it. I would call it, I had to unlearn consensus as safety. In big companies, alignment reduces risk. And we get really safe at getting ourselves aligned and our ducks in a row. And I actually think it's one of the things that hinders a lot of big companies at being innovative, because you get alignment, you get a consensus, and you make sure everybody feels really comfortable and really safe. In startups, it can become, you know, what I'd call stuck in the mud or slow motion failure. And it's just the worst thing and can be death. And you have to be able to just go and don't worry about consensus. You have to be able to move really fast. And so I had to unlearn consensus and had to be able to be comfortable to move really fast and on my own. And that wasn't such a problem for me, Thomas, because I was always one of those big company people in the corporate environment that was always seen as an outlier. I was always seen as an entrepreneur within the big company and a risk taker within a large company. So this was easy for me to unlearn quickly. But I also had to unlearn what I would call overbuilding and seeking perfection. And I still have to do this. I was always looking for perfect decks, perfect presentations, perfect processes. This is why I like working with you, because I'm always looking for a really good process and a good operating system and the best way for us to work. And the job in a startup is to move quickly, less than perfection. And so you have to allow yourself to be vulnerable, and it can't always be perfect and polished and the best. And I also had to unlearn deep data dives. And this is really hard for me. Diving for that 90% or 100% answer, diving for perfection and diving for accuracy. You hear me talk a lot about speed, because time is critical. Speed is imperative. Getting to revenue quickly. Investors, they want fast return on their money. And even the investment environment now has gotten, how fast can you get to that revenue, to the milestone that the investors want? Otherwise, you're not going to raise money, because they're not going to fund you indefinitely. And so how fast can you get to milestone, get to revenue, get to the outcome you've promised? You need to make things happen so you can get to your best hypothesis. So instead of 90, 10, 80, 20, everything has to be 70, 30, 60, 40, 50, 50, and then you've got to move on, which means your experiments, your scientific experiments, and scientists, they're wanting to look for perfection. And so you need to help scientists. Somebody like me needs to help scientists, and scientists need to even change the way they think to look for what's my best data that I can get that gets me there at a lower probability, but gives me some kind of outcome that starts to build confidence back here and gets me to a small incremental milestone. And then I go to the next, and then I go to the next, and I can convince people here at an earlier stage. So it's run the smallest test that teaches you the most. And you have to be really creative to think about that smallest test and build your confidence in increments. And that's something I really had to unlearn, because I'm a data-driven person, and I had to figure out how to do that. But at the same time, it allowed the creative side of my mind to work. And that's a lot more fun and energizing and risk, but allowed the risk-taking side of me to work. The end story of that is I had to get more comfortable with being less polished publicly allow the risk taking to come out more publicly, because learning beats looking smart. And that's the key, one of the keys in a startup. And so I just traded polish for pace in the startup world.
I like that, polish for pace. I think that's a great phrase. So one is, right, changes that you yourself need to make, right, in terms of how you lead, dive less in the data, live with the ambiguity. But what about the people that you hire, the team that you bring on board? What are you looking for in your current, like living in the startup world now? What are like some of the characteristics or traits that you're looking for? And how is that different from if you look back into your corporate world, the kind of people that you would hire there?
So it's very different, because in the corporate world, you're really hiring for a role, and a very specific role. And often it's for a specific function and a very specific role. And then you're trying to slot people into this broader culture. Is there room for that development that's going to fit within that culture and that role? And here in startups, it's so different. And one, I want to talk about the chaos, because you need people that are going to be comfortable within that kind of environment. And I look for a few things. I look for ownership. So will people take ownership of all that they're doing? Because in a startup, you have to have broad ownership from end to end of what they're doing. It's not a role. When I started at Nestle, my role was product management, and I owned this brand, and I owned the P&L, and I knew exactly the function, my role within this box. When you walk into a startup, you're doing a multitude of things, and it's not so well defined, because we all need to jump in and take ownership of everything, because it's chaos, it's ambiguity, and today I may need to do this, and tomorrow I may need to do that. Because remember, we're living in a hypothesis that can change, because I'm building based on the feedback of my customer. I'm building based on the feedback from my board. I'm building based on the feedback from my investors. And we will pivot as we go along on this journey. And so what is the ownership that you're going to take and move with us as we go on this pivot and learn to bring that technology and create its value in the marketplace? The second thing that I look for is learning speed, because we're learning as we go on this, and speed is really important. So how fast will somebody learn as we build our learning together in a startup? Because when you begin a startup, and when you bring a product to market on the startup, doesn't look the same with what you thought it would be at the beginning to where you are once you get to the market. It never, ever is. And the third piece is resiliency, because in all of that I just talked about and the ambiguity and the chaos in that, boy, you better have resiliency in your DNA. And your ability to get back on that horse, because it'll change, you'll get knocked down, things won't work, you get a lot of no's. So what is your ability to be resilient, and is it in your DNA? Like I said, in big companies, you can hire specialists, and the systems, boy, they'll catch you. If you fail, if it doesn't work, and they can get back up. In startups, you need people who can build while the system is still being invented, like I said earlier, because we're building the plane as we're flying it. And I'm looking for builders who just don't need permission. They'll just go and build. And people who are really curious about the technology, curious about customers, and curious about the market and what's going on out there. And people who can easily switch from strategy to execution. And people who will do all of those things without a lot of ego. Because, boy, we're going to get our hands dirty in a startup. And I think I've heard you say this before. Hiring is an ethical decision. And I said, you hire for a role in a big company, but in a startup, I'm aware that people are taking a risk coming into a startup. And so I want them to be aware of the chaos, aware of what they're going to be carrying on their back. And so I'm very transparent. And I'm also very particular about those things that I'm searching for and the kind of people that I'm bringing into a startup.
I think you're onto something there, because one thing I see in large companies, we have a little bit like a single-use mindset. We hire somebody for this task, and the moment that changes, we're very quick at ripping people out and saying, we don't need this
anymore. Yeah.
I think in the startup, you don't have that luxury, because if you change, you can't change horses every 2 minutes. You need people to grow in these roles. And so we have a very different mindset, and we assume that people are probably not going to do that job that we brought in 6 months from now or 3 months from now, because we're going to need different things as we learn more about the market. And I think that's a real difference. And I think large companies could probably benefit from adopting a little bit of that mindset to say, people are not single use. They can do a lot of different things. Let's give them the opportunities to grow into these new spaces, even if they don't check all the boxes at the beginning.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Absolutely. Before we talk more about big companies and what they fail at hiring people and in startups, because I advise startups as well. And I was just on a call this morning coaching one of the founders, and he was talking about building his organization. I am advising them, let's do some variable hiring and just hire consultants, hire fractional, because we don't know yet. And we don't know what we need. And we're so early. And it's okay if we're hiring for fractional consultants, freelance at this stage. For that very point that you made, Thomas, that we don't want to be in a place where we're 6 months or 12 months in and then we're having to let people go, because there's so much pivoting that we do and we're still so early in our hypothesis and we're not sure. And I've seen this because I have myself been in three different startups in the last 8 years. And every one of them have been where we have let people go within 12 to 24 months because we made such big pivots and we didn't have the right people. And I think that's incredibly destructive. And we could have stayed at a variable place and then made better decisions 24 months later in terms of our organizational structure. And I just go back to that ethical decision around your organizational structure and your hiring decisions.
Yeah, the other thing I sometimes see is like when people come from a large company, they're used to having an incredible support system. They got multiple layers and senior directors and senior managers. And so sometimes when I see them in a startup environment, their first move is to rebuild that structure. Because that's how they get the work done. And what you and I both know is that's really the wrong impulse. You need a couple of multi-purpose Swiss Army knife people who can help you get there or get to the next stage.
Yes. You know what I think people forget, or they don't do a good job of when they're in a large organization? And I've seen this too through all of the layoffs that are happening in my industry, in the food tech industry. They forget that they have a network, or they don't build a network. And one of the things that I'm grateful for and proud of is that I always built a strong network. And when I walked, the first time I walked into a startup, I didn't build a big organization. I didn't have the money to. I got great coaching from the venture capital organization that I was associated with about this very topic, this discussion that we're having now on people, is to build everything variable. It was just fantastic coaching about doing things on a variable fractional basis until you build your confidence and you know where you're going. And because I had built a strong network, even though I was in a large organization, I had just done good networking. I leaned into my network to help me. And there were things I didn't know. I'm not a scientist. I'm not an engineer. I'm not an operations person. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a CFO. I leaned into my network to be my organization. I didn't hire those people, but I called the former chief scientific officer at Abbott Nutrition, and he had retired a few years ago, and I asked his help. And I leaned into the best engineer I used to work with at DuPont. I just reached into my network and started asking for help. And the same with a regulatory expert, and did that, and networked. And those people became like my board of advisors. And they helped me find variable help. I found the best fractional CFO, and he worked like 5 to 10 hours a week for me. And so I never had to fire anybody. But they lifted me into a startup that we eventually IPO'd. And I did all of that for the first 12 to 18 months on a variable basis and made me the best that I could be. And so that coaching and my network is what got me off to a running start.
So we talked a lot about Zuckbite in the startup phase. It's about finding product market fit. It's a lot of experiments. It's good enough assumptions and being able to pivot quickly. But at some point in time, hopefully you find a match and now it's time to scale. What advice do you have for people to prepare for scaling? Because it's not that you can flip the switch and say, now we're going to go to a large company mindset where everything is tucked down. You're not going to go from here to there in one big swoop. So what are some practices or recommendations you would give people that set them up to scale quickly?
I think about scaling as not just more. In a startup, most founders and leaders think about it as just more. I just need more of what I'm doing on the bench. And if I can do that, it's great. It's about repeatability. And so here's what I focus on. I focus on first the non-negotiables. What I'm trying to deliver here is what stays true about the customer promise and our culture. And that customer promise, it's different for every company or every startup, but what are those things that are most critical that you've created in your value proposition or the value of the promise that you've made to your customer? And what is it that you can't break? Non-negotiables. And so if it's a specific product quality, like in our case at Elo, it's a very specific expression level that we're trying to drive in the field. My last startup, it was a titer that we were delivering. And then it was that specific quality. It was the demand that we were going to make, and it was repeatable quality and the demand. And at a specific cost, it's what are those promises that you're making and you have to deliver over and over again. And then the milestones against those and the timeline against that, that you're going to be able to do that and how fast you can get there. And then the culture that you're going to drive behind that. And then the second one is I'll call the lightweight mechanisms. And actually, I think you're one of the people that had taught me that. And I call them lightweight because in a startup, if you have too much processes and like the heavy processes of a large organization, you're going to kill yourself. But you still need just enough processes so you get the job done. So those are the decision rights, the meeting cadences, the metrics, what are you going to measure on an ongoing basis? Those lightweight mechanisms, these are the things that startups just most of the times don't pay attention to, and they keep living in constant chaos. And the third thing is removing the bottlenecks. What you have to remove is the founder and or the executive team doesn't become the central point for every decision. And this is interesting because this is where I see a lot of startups make this mistake as well. The founder or the executive team or the CEO becomes the control of everything. So you must remove those bottlenecks so you can scale and you can allow the organization to become the decision makers, and you can scale and get the operations running productively so that you deliver on the customer promise. At DuPont and at Soleil, I learned what breaks at scale. It's the quality. It's the handoffs. You don't have those right decision points so you can make the right handoffs. Margin leakage starts to happen. So in startups like Elo, I build just enough systems early so growth doesn't turn into chaos. And that's the kind of things that I have to work on in a startup. Having lived through large integrations and global operations, you know, I've seen what breaks when you scale way too late and what breaks when you systemize too early and you put too many heavy processes in the organization. That's what I think is the tension where you have to get where leadership can really live. And that's the value of having big company leadership, but adapting that for startup. So I would leave you with this and thinking about that. In a startup, scaling is making success repeatable without killing vitality.
Final question. You've done a great job at selling us on the benefits. It sounds very enticing. I'm pretty sure that there's people who listen to this who work in a large company who say, that sounds really good. I'd like to be in this creating value for customers world. But what questions should they ask themselves to determine whether that's for them?
That's an important question, Thomas, because I don't think startups are right for everybody. It's really only for probably a few of us because of the ambiguity and the uncertainty. Ask yourself these questions. And the first one is, do I get energy from ambiguity? Or do I need the certainty that a large organization, a big company brings? And I'm not talking about certainty in job security. That's not what I mean. I'm talking about certainty in my role, certainty in the things that I do on a daily basis. When I was at DuPont, when I was at Soleil, when I was at Nestle, I knew what I did every day. I knew that there would be a budget review every year. I knew I would have a five-year strategic plan every year. I knew what my operations team did. I knew the role and the function all the time. In a startup, you need to get the energy from the ambiguity. And right now, at this stage in my life, I'm loving all that ambiguity and solving for all the problems that the ambiguity brings. That's what I love personally. The other question I would ask myself is, am I willing to trade status and the resources for speed and ownership? Now, for me, at the stage that I was at, that I traded that, I was an executive in a great big company. So I traded a lot of status. I had thousands of people around me. I had a really big title, big role. I had a lot of people doing a lot of stuff for me. But even if you're at a much lower level, it's still big status. You get to say, ooh, I'm working for Ingredion or I'm working for Google. And there's a ton of resources around you. even if you're not spending a lot of money, you can walk down the hallway and there's John, who's the smartest programmer, or Susie, who's the best engineer, or Matt, who's the best marketer. And you can rely on all of those resources to help you do your work. When I walked into a startup, I'm building financial models. I hadn't worked in an Excel file in 20 years, and I had to relearn algebraic equations so I could figure out how to rebuild models. And I had to go back and relearn everything that I hadn't done, because you're doing everything all by yourself. And that's what I mean about trading in your status and resources for the speed and ownership that I get now, and for the closeness to the customer, to the market, and to the truth that I get now. The other thing I would ask is, can I also decide with a lot less data and a lot less information than I had before? All that uncertainty. And the other thing I would ask is, am I willing to do unglamorous work? Because in startups, this is my line I say to everybody, everyone carries the boxes. And in startups, I clean the kitchen, I load my own paper into the Xerox machine. Do we call them that anymore? And the printers. If I have to get down on the floor and pack boxes, I do that. Even though I have the CEO title, the CCO title, whatever my title is in any startup, I have gone down and I have cleaned rooms. I have packed shelves. I go to trade shows and I pack and unpack things. I hang banners, because that's what it takes to get things done. So are you willing to do that unglamorous work and not have people do the work for you? And if those answers are yes, it's for you. It can be incredibly fulfilling. I would say you're trying to decide what kind of leader you want to be and what environment lets that leader do the best work for you. For me, it just came down to energy and where I'm getting my energy from. I didn't leave the big company because it just came down to what I wanted to be winning at. In a big company, I was winning through execution. I wanted to be winning at building. It was just a different season in my life. I have a philosophy that I call, you write the rules, and I decided I was going to change the rules. And so big companies gave me credibility and capability, which has been so valuable to me. Startups give me aliveness now. And that's not better or worse. It's just a choice. And my season in my life about 8 years ago just changed for me. And so making that choice consciously is what I mean by this philosophy I live by about you write the rules. And so that's just a choice for people to think about when you think about being in a startup. And so it may be time for you, it may be the right choice for you, but think about those ideas that I've put out there. And so for me, it was about taking my strengths into this new place in startups, not taking the bureaucracy of a big company.
First of all, I think it's super helpful you sharing your perspective, having lived both in a big company and in the startup world, because I think in big companies, we sometimes lose sight of that. Peter Drucker said the purpose of the business is to create a customer. Customers in large organizations, they're oftentimes way down in the food chain. There's all these other things to worry about. And I think there's really an important lesson to be learned. Same with talent. We talked about single-use tools in startups. You need people to do all sorts of stuff, things we didn't even know when we hired them. I think there's some really great lessons that you share. And I do remember you and I talking about when you were thinking about, do I double down on the startup experience or do I go back into a big corporate role? I'm so glad you stayed with the startup world, because otherwise we wouldn't have this conversation. It's been really fulfilling to see you thrive in that environment. Michelle Veit, thank you so much for coming on the show and for sharing your hard-earned wisdom. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this discussion. If you did, be sure to subscribe, like, share, or comment. Until next time, let's make work matter. Goodbye.